Well, good morning. This, again, is the Seven Generations radio show, and I'm fortunate to have today with me Laura Stapleton and Alan Rissinger. And let me just do a mic check. You want to see Laura? Are you coming through?
Hello?
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. And Alan?
I'm also here.
Okay, good. It's working. Oh, here.
Hello.
Okay, it's working, so you're on the air. I'm fortunate to have Alan and Laura here. They've done a lot of work in the area of helping mountain people with problems due to fossil fuel removal. And they do an annual event called the Stop the Kaboom Festival, which I'm sure they can tell us about. And they also do some work in very knowledgeable about what we can do in our communities to deal with fracking. I know we had had a brief conversation about home rule, and I'm hoping you will discuss that for us and also tell us your latest information dealing with energy efficiency. I know you're at the workshop last weekend, and that was here at Shepherd, and I attended the first day of that, and they had a couple of films on. One was called Switch, which I thought was very good, even though it didn't have the kind of biases that I like. It didn't really talk an awful lot about climate change. What it did talk about was what are the different sources of fuel, where does it come from, where can we potentially get fuel, what are the best examples of how that is working around the globe, and it went into each one of those, and we can talk about that at a later point, but it is a good film if you get a chance to see it. It's called Switch. So with that, I would like to turn it over to you guys, and you can just tell me what you've been up to, what your thoughts are. I would like to just kind of start by getting an idea from you where you're coming from. Why is this important to you? Why are the things that you do important to you? And we'll go from there.
Want me to start? Okay. I guess my name's Laura, and I moved to West Virginia. I've got family from here, but grew up in Florida, and I've been here 6 years now. First moving to the Eastern Panhandle over in Morgan County, and after being here about a year, I moved on to Southern West Virginia and saw firsthand the destruction of mountaintop removal for coal mining, and worked in a lot of small communities in the Coal River Valley on ways they could address those and helping them with public hearings and getting letters out and talking to the Department of Environmental Protection, which is not very fruitful, especially down in southern West Virginia. And worked with groups Coal River Mountain Watch and Mountain Justice and what is now the RAMPS campaign, which stands for Radical Action for Mountain People Survival. And so also got involved in nonviolent direct action, so where protests were staged that would stop equipment from working, not by rigging the equipment in any way, but putting your body in a place that stops production of coal being moved from those mountaintops. And also just learned a whole lot from the communities about what they experienced and the history of the state and coal mining and how it's had its claws pretty much in Appalachia, not just West Virginia, but southwestern Virginia, Kentucky, and parts of Tennessee for over 100 years now. And the same sort of oppression, the one coming up in Kentucky, I'm really excited about for the amount of trainers that are going to be there. And it'll be, sometime we'll be headlining that on Sunday, which is pretty great. They give a lot of support to the anti-mountaintop removal efforts. And so this group out of Kentucky had And yeah, I'll let Alan talk now. Go ahead.
My history in West Virginia is I've lived in West Virginia my whole life. I've lived in southern West Virginia and around the Huntington area, which Huntington isn't directly impacted by the coal industry, but most of the coal that comes through West Virginia goes through Huntington, either through the rail system or it's all downhill, basically. So, I grew up in West Virginia, going fishing, going to the mountains and hiking, camping, enjoying the state, the beauties that this state does have to offer, living in a part of this country that has so much extreme, old beauty. And when I first found out about mountaintop removal, because, unless you're in the areas that are directly impacted by it, there's very little information. They kind of want to keep the blindfolds on people about what is actually happening, about the communities that are being impacted. So once I actually became aware of what was going on, and anybody that's ever seen a mountaintop removal site that has any, love for the planet or love for nature or anything, cannot help but be impacted by that and want to do something to stop it. I mean, it's destructive, it's devastating. Communities around are, higher levels of cancer. I mean, so basically my, pouring into this cause, per se, was because I lost my headphone. Was because of the fact that, this is my state. This is where I grew up, and I want my child to be able to grow up and enjoy the same things that I did when I was a kid, and not have to worry about, is this water poison? Is this, going to be our legacy for our kids? Is it going to be, living in a state where you have to be afraid to get in the water? You can't go to anywhere because of the pollution. So, I mean, that's the primary reason that I've became involved in this movement, is because of that.
It's interesting what you say. When I was a kid, and this goes back a ways, I grew up in Florida, and my dad used to take us to go swimming in crystal clear rivers. We would see beautiful grasses, beautiful water. You could see for long distances. There were turtles, there were fish. It was wonderful. And these were crystal clear springs in Florida, part of the aquifer. And whenever I see a creek or a river, I say, it's not like it should be. If I don't see fish, lots of fish, if I don't see lots of life, if I don't see healthy grasses, then I know it's not what it should be. And I worry about, well, should I go swimming in this? This is a great way to have recreation with nature. And yet, do you have to fear nature itself now? I mean, it's one thing to go to a swimming pool and you get the chlorine and all that, but when you go into nature, you expect to be able to jump in a creek and be at home, and for all the birds and the fish and all the critters to be at home with it. So, this really strikes home to me. And, everybody should grow up where waters are clean, where you don't have to worry. But I want to ask you a question. Who regulates this stuff? Why is it that the coal companies are able to do this?
Well, we're supposed to have, a very powerful organization called the DEP, Department of Protection. Department of Environmental Protection.
And the EPA.
And the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, that are supposed to be handling these things, to be able to say, this is a limit, of what you can do before it contaminates the surrounding area. Both of these groups are heavily tied to the industry. It seems like the Department of Environmental Protection in West Virginia has, you know, had long-standing agreements with the coal companies and now with the natural gas industry that they're going to just let them do whatever they want. You know, the whole drill, baby, drill idea that, you know, this is our, you know, it's a very short-sighted, short-term look at what the problem is. But the regulations are easily circumvented by any of the industries. When they do get fined, it is like, you know, a slap on the wrist. It's like, you know, $20,000 when they're saving, you know, millions of dollars by doing the pollution and not doing it correctly.
And I hear that the Clean Water Act and other acts have major exemptions for the coal industry. You know, why would the dirtiest polluter be exempt? I don't get that. It seems crazy to me and backwards.
Well, they have lots of lobbyists, and that's the big, lots of money that they're pumping into state governments, local governments. And this has been the history in West Virginia. It's been the history in Kentucky, Tennessee, any of the states that are involved in coal and natural gas.
Out west as well.
Out west as well. I mean, these are industries that have extreme amounts of money. I mean, you're taking something out of the ground that doesn't cost them really anything other than the fact that they have to extract it, and they're selling at exorbitant prices to us so we can keep our lights on, so we can, you know, drive down the road, so for all those reasons. And like I said before, that's a very short-term, short-sighted view of what, you know, our future is going to be. But since I've, you know, my whole life living in West Virginia, I've known the corruption within our government. I know that, you know, you don't get elected in this state unless you are in the pockets of those industries, unless you receive money from those industries to get you into office. And anybody that speaks out against them is vilified in this state.
So I'd like to say, as far as who's regulating these issues, I give a lot of credit to the people in these communities, the small organizations that are involved, and the community members that are on the ground of actually, like, have to create their own task force and police the companies, if you will, because, I mean, there are now, but so there's a group down in southern West Virginia, and they have trained citizens to look for the work that can be stopped. So I do give a lot of credit to the people in these areas that are really the real regulators, really, in the state anyways.
We had a previous conversation in which you mentioned the role of home rule in West Virginia with regard to the ability of communities to enact local legislation, for example, zoning legislation that would keep, let's say, fracking or depositing of waste in their area, say fracking waste or mining waste. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, from my understanding of what the West Virginia's Home Rule organization, it's a pilot program, because as of right now, most of the municipalities in West Virginia do not have home rule. And home rule is basically saying that, you know, each municipality has the ability to govern itself, you know, to pass taxes, new taxes, to sell property, to impose legislation, and those kind of things. Unfortunately, in West Virginia, from further research, they've basically limited those powers. Even in their, you know, projects, they've limited the scope of what somebody that is doing the home rule can do. So you cannot impose anything that has to do with environmental. That is one of the limitations that they put on that. And that, again, is because, you know, our politicians are in the pockets of the coal industry and the natural gas industry. So, but we do have other alternatives within that kind of home rule ideal that aren't the environmental route. We can impose, you know, truck traffic, extreme traffic, those kind of things.
So, and with the truck traffic, I know they've expanded the pilot program. 5 years ago, it was Wheeling, Bridgeport, Charleston, and was it Huntington?
Huntington.
And then those 5 years expired, and they expanded the research in those cities, and then they also expanded it to include a total of 20. So Ranson has been one of the ones that have filed for it. Martinsburg, which I believe just recently got accepted. And where we live in Berkeley Springs, the small town of Bath is applying for it. We are, before home rule was even started to be studying in the state, we rated like second to the bottom of local control, meaning we can't have what you call referendums, where if you get so many signatures on a petition, you know, you should be able to take that to your county commission and say, well, let's vote to add or delete this law in our county. The only thing we can do referendums on in the state of West Virginia are zoning issues, which a few years ago there was a zoning issue put on the ballot in Morgan County. And so one of the discussions around the town of Bath, including home rule, I saw from one of the watershed groups, Warm Springs Watershed Association, their president, Kate Lehman, had spoke out in the paper hoping that if we got accepted into home rule, that we could possibly limit the amount of truck traffic carrying hazardous materials in case of, you know, those tankers spilling and spilling into our waterways. She wasn't quite sure that was possible, but hoping home rule could include something like that. If that's the case, I could see that being tremendously beneficial for all three of these counties where hazardous materials are coming through all the time. And, you know, we really have no way to track that or say right now, no, you can't come through our county roads.
So what you're saying is, and from what Alan said, the home rule provisions, they don't allow you to regulate, they don't allow the community to regulate environmental issues per se.
Anything environmental. They've limited the scope.
That's what it flat out said on their environmental plans.
Yeah, so what
they want to be able to lower our fees. They want to be able to sell their own properties within the municipality without having to do an auction. They want to be able to, you know, basically this is just a, in my opinion, a ploy to say to each municipality that you can open up your area for more business. You can give lower taxes to companies coming in. You can, you know, streamline the process for business to come in. So, I mean, this is a home rule, but it's not really a home rule. This is just a way to bring more industry into our state, which, I mean,
So,
the limited scope of that, you know, they basically curtailed everything that you could do with it. You can't just put a flat-out ban saying we don't want this in our community, which, you know, every community should be able to do that.
And going back to what you said, Laura, about referendums, now, this has always just bothered me, and I wasn't aware of this still. A couple of years ago, I got involved in this Citizens United protesting, and I eventually went before the Martinsburg City Council, and they agreed to go along with a resolution against the influence of money in politics, and actually the state of West Virginia, through the previous Attorney General, went on record, too, in this regard. But it was then that I found out that you couldn't put something on the ballot and say, hey, people, let's vote on this issue and say, do we want to get money out of politics in the state of West Virginia? Mm-hmm. Well, you can't do that. That's a federal matter. Well, you know, there's no other avenue for redress. You just go and talk to somebody to pass a resolution. So we are, you know, a very disenfranchised citizenry, I would say, in this state.
They want to keep us that way, too.
And they want to keep us that way.
Yeah, and with fracking, I mean, at least coal, you do have some regulations. It still hasn't stopped a lot of the problems, obviously. But with fracking for natural gas, there is no federal regulations in place right now. So we are totally reliant on the state to protect us from that. And, well, you know, we see how that goes with all the other issues. So there's no even higher process other than the state of West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection to help people fighting the gas industry.
So there are a number of, like, strong organizations, environmental organizations that are working on these issues, but it seems that, you know, the table's kind of tilted against them, so they're always, you know, fighting uphill. It's very difficult. Folks like Potomac River Keepers and Sierra Club and many other organizations, but they've got an awful difficult road ahead of them. I want to ask you about other things that you're into. I noticed you had mentioned you had been to the workshops on energy efficiency and maybe been involved in some of that work. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I always love to really think about the positive ways we can work together because, you know, you hear so many negative things. It's hard or it's easy to get overwhelmed and just be like, oh, there's nothing we could do about it. But there's lots of ways to be involved. And one positive thing that's sort of happening in this state and in lots of places, but again, West Virginia falls near the bottom, like they do in a lot of areas, unfortunately, on energy efficiency in that state. And that's because we have our utility companies who would rather things not be efficient because they can just tax the ratepayers to burn more coal. Our Public Service Commission also, you know, isn't really for the people. So they're not pressing the issue for energy efficiency standards. There is a lawsuit right now, which Sierra Club intervened with the Public Service Commission against First Energy. That and it should have been out, but the answer should be coming out soon on pushing these utility companies to become more efficient, to have more home and school weatherization programs. So we'll find out soon what comes out of that. But the West Virginia chapter of Sierra Club decided about a year and a half ago to start organizing around communities to help their community, county, city level become more efficient in energy. And right now, within that year and a half, they just had a training in Shepherdstown last weekend that was wonderful. And there were people there representing, it was like 20% of the 55 counties, or I think it was 10 out of the 55 counties. So almost 20% of the counties are starting to organize around this in a year and a half. I thought that was pretty darn good. What I can speak to locally, different counties are doing different projects. But in Jefferson County, there's an organizing group through Sustainable Shepherdstown. So if you go to their website and get a hold of either Amanda Gardner or Graham, you can get involved with the Shepherdstown Energy Efficiency Group. You could also find out through them. There's a group organizing out of Harper's Ferry through my friend Danny Chiotis, who lives over there, and a couple other wonderful people that I haven't met yet. And so what they're working on, there's one in Berkeley County as well, and we're trying to start one just real recently down in Morgan County. And so ways that we're organizing around that are first talking to people about it, setting together a plan, talking to building managers of the county and building managers of the schools, and starting with, do you have, you know, have you even had an energy audit in this county? And if you have, where were you losing your energy? Are there ways you can become more efficient in your county buildings, city buildings, school buildings? Now, they have these things, different organizations, or not organizations, corporations, really, that are doing performance contracts. And down in Harrison County, the school board put together a performance contract with this group who came into the school system and said, this didn't cost the school anything up front. It wasn't even changing light bulbs or anything. It was just straight up energy conservation. So, and they were real particular about it. Like, they monitored the school. You know, they made sure you were shutting your blinds when you left. You turned the light switches off. You turned the computers off. And just being more efficient, they told the school, if we don't save you money in the first year, and I think it was a big chunk of money, it was like over $200,000. If we don't save you that in the first year in the Harrison County schools, then we will pay you $200,000. Well, in the first year, they saved $350,000 in Harrison County. Right. And so then with the performance contract, you do pay that company who's helped you come in and conserve energy. And you pay them every year, I think, for 5 years, a certain amount of money. But it's not more than what the school is saving every year.
Great. And what's the group? Solar Holler. Solar Holler, right. I'd like to get them in here one of these days to talk about what they're doing. But I think they do financing, which works along those same principles, right, where you get the payback from the savings. energy efficiency through solar installations.
Mm-hmm, that group, I'm really excited, and they're right here in Shepherdstown, and they're working with the Shepherdstown group. They just recently got solar panels put on the Presbyterian Church here locally, and they've worked in other places throughout the state, down in Lewisburg, I think a low-income housing project, and another place in West Virginia was, I believe, a city building. So they've got a couple projects going on. And how that works is there's a company out of Frederick called Mosaic that puts these little boxes on your hot water tanks. And during power surges, when the utility companies would normally be using backup diesel generators, which are incredibly dirty, they're drawing a little bit of energy from everyone's hot water tank. And again, Dan and the folks at Solar Holler could talk to this in more detail than I can. But so you get these boxes on everyone's hot water tank, and Mosaic agrees they're getting money back from the power company, and they agree to give that individual with the box on their hot water tank $100 every year. So what they did in Shepherdstown and in other places have had those people donate that $100 every year to a community solar project. So it then helps that community space, whether it's a church or a library, community center, housing project, pay their loans off even quicker.
That sounds great. How do you stay wired into these projects? Is there an organization that you're a part of, or is this pretty much freelancing?
Well, I guess
into different areas.
Officially, unofficially, the West Virginia Sierra Club chapter, which is the first time I've really done work with the Sierra Club, and can't really speak to them nationally on their level, but there's quite a few incredible organizers in West Virginia's chapter, at least that I've met. And so this is sort of a project that they've started, and Danny Chiodas over in Harper's Ferry is helping to organize these different teams throughout the state. And it doesn't mean you have to be a member of Sierra Club. They've just sort of they're putting on the trainings and helping to organize people and providing support where they can. So these different counties, like I said, the one out of Shepherdstown was a project through Sustainable Shepherd.
Okay, so a couple of the organizations, if you want to get involved in these activities, would be Sustainable Shepherdstown, which has an energy efficiency group, focus and group, and also the West Virginia Sierra Club. Now, the West Virginia Sierra Club, what was the name? Did you want to put a name out on that one?
If you go to their website, I'm not sure he would see. Bill Price works with that, and he also works with the Clean Coal Campaign. Marion Hitt of Shepherdstown could probably put you in touch with folks, because her and her partner, Than's been real involved also in the Shepherdstown Solar Panel Project. Or Danny Chiodas, his name's probably up there. Get a hold of him. So I'm sure when you go to that website, you can find all these different names of people you could contact, shoot an email, and we can get you involved as well. Or okay. If you go to the Stop the Kaboom website, you can email me or Alan, and we can put you in touch with folks in your area as
okay.
well.
We've only got a few more minutes because I've got a caller coming in, but I did want to ask you to talk a little bit about Stop the Kaboom and anything else that you've got on your mind that you wanted to convey to the listeners.
Sure, I'll let Alan go ahead. I've been talking a lot.
Okay. The Stop the Kaboom Festival is something that was started, I guess, by Laura and a few others 4 years ago now to basically raise awareness in this area and to raise a little bit of funds. Funds aren't necessarily the most important thing, but raising awareness, letting people know what is actually going on, letting them know what the problem is. I mean, I have so many people that have came to me since the festival and said, I didn't even know what fracking was before, you know, we went to this festival. And that seems to be the case in a lot of areas. People aren't aware of what is actually happening. They see, you know, they hear the rhetoric that's being put out by the other side, and then they, you know, instantly say, okay, you know, we're for that because it means that we're going to be energy independent, we're going to be prosperous. But all these things have direct impact on not only the environment but the people that live there. So we wanted to be able to create something within this area that directly links people to the areas that are directly impacted. So my history coming off of, you know, I've been into music my whole life, so I thought, you know, this is a perfect opportunity to bring you know, my love for music and this creation of things and bring people together in a way that's not necessarily all complaining about issues, all like, you know, fighting against this stuff, but a way for people to come together and to find solutions, to be able to move forward, to build connections, and also to have a good time. You know, environmentalists like to have a good time too. So,
and what are the dates of the festival?
The festival is August 1st through 3rd. Venue is still up in the air. We're still trying to find a location. We do have 25 bands. A lot of, you know, most of the, you know, the better bands in the region, in my opinion, are attending the festival. We have some of the bigger bands are.
Our
Freedom Enterprise, the Nolly Moles, Tim Sutrop Project. From Shepherdstown area, we got, you know, Luke Johnson Band. We have the Folk and Right Band. We have Queen.
Bloody Nines, Bloody Chelsea Nines. McBee, Sunrise Review.
Yeah, I don't believe Chelsea's going to be there this year. But Monkey Island.
Yeah, Scott and Betty Joe. So we'll also have speakers, and this year the funds are going to the Keepers of the Mountain Foundation, based out of Charleston, West Virginia, who's been doing work a long time against mountaintop removal, also working on creating viable economic solutions, and most recently doing a lot of organizing around the chemical spill down in Charleston, helping people to do rainwater catchment, get clean water from, you know, helping with bottled water drives in the beginning.
Thank you guys for coming in, and you're welcome to stick around. I've got a caller coming in a couple of minutes, and it's going to be kind of on the economics vein, but it's all about the haves and the have-nots and whether our economic system is working for us or isn't it. So, like I said, stick around if you can. And I really appreciate you guys coming in here. And, Alan, go ahead. You had some.
Well, I mean, the last thing I want to leave with is that this is a problem that's facing everyone, and everyone needs to be involved. You know, there's something that everyone out there, everyone listening, can do, can become involved in. This isn't a problem that we can rely on our governments to change. This isn't a problem that we can even rely on the organizations that are now fighting its change. We need a movement. We need a growing movement.